This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We are in San Antonio this week, broadcasting from the Brooks City base on the outskirts of town. And here at the base, they are commemorating National MIA POW Day. In fact, Brooks City Base is where the Air Force investigates downed and missing pilots from all parts of the world and to try and give closure to some of the families who are missing loved ones. And this laboratory is unique to Texas. Actually, it's the only one of its kind in the country. In fact, Texas and San Antonio are unique in many ways. And one way that we're going to focus on this hour is how they get their electrical power. Here in San Antonio, electricity is supplied by City Public Service, and CPS provides close to 4,000 megawatts of power a year to San Antonio. And of that 4,000 megawatts, about 4% come from wind. So if you drive about 4 hours out of town into Pecos County, you come across a very intriguing site, the Desert Sky Wind Farm Project. There, over 100 wind turbines sit high on a mesa, blades spinning in the wind, generating at least part of the power that is carrying my voice out to you. Now, Texas is on the cutting edge of a trend that is spreading across the world and across this country, the coming of age of wind power. Texas is second only to California in megawatts of installed wind power. How did Texas come to be a national leader in wind energy? Is the rest of the country following close behind? If you'd like to get in on our conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And if you're a member of our audience here, please feel free to step up to the microphones and to share your opinions with us, ask a question. Let me introduce my guests, starting from my immediate left and working down the table. Walter Hornaday is the president of Cielo Wind Power in Austin. Thank you for being with us today.
Howdy, thank you.
Joe Fulton is the director of research and environmental management for City Public Service in San Antonio. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ira.
Russell Smith is the executive director of the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association in Austin. Thank you for joining us.
Pleased to be here.
And on us, with us on the phone is Roy Blackshear. He is the plant manager of that Desert Sky Wind Farm project in Pecos County. Thanks for being with us, Roy. Let me ask all the panelists here, and let me start with you, Russell. We don't think of Texas as being the wind capital of the, or almost the wind capital. We think of oil wells in Texas. What is this? What's going on here?
Well, a lot of people have opinions about what Texas is or isn't.
That's a good way to start. Okay.
But there's one thing that Texas is and has been and will continue to be, and that's an energy state. Texas understands energy. And Texas intends to remain in the forefront of energy development. And it's become fairly obvious to decision makers and people in business and so forth that the way we're going to have to do that is to broaden our energy base in the state and develop all the resources that we can. In West Texas, we have a lot of experience in drilling into the ground, drilling down to get the oil and gas. Mm-hmm. And now we're using that experience to figure out how to drill up to tap the wind that flows above the ground. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. It's logical. We've been working on this for 25 years, laying the groundwork for it, and ultimately we'll be the major producer of wind power in the country.
Mm-hmm. Joe, you have anything to say?
Well, Texas is wind-friendly because for a number of reasons, as Russell pointed out, but we also have some legislation here that mandates certain amounts of wind, 2,000 megawatts by the year 2009. And we also have truly open access to the transmission system and what they call a postage stamp rate. And that lets people in West Texas ship their energy throughout Texas and not have to pay exorbitant amounts for that.
Mm-hmm. Is the electricity competitive with what you'd get from other forms?
The electricity is competitive with gas-fired generation, or it will soon be. That's a big advantage right now. Gas is going through the roof, and there doesn't seem to be any logical cap on the price of gas. And as gas gets more and more expensive, some of the renewable energy products will start looking more and more economical.
Mm-hmm. Roy Blackshear, tell us what the turbines look like when you drive up to them. Are they noisy, or they make a lot of noise, or scare people? And what happens there?
Well, if it's a windy day. And, of course, we like windy days, but if it's a windy day, when you get a few hundred feet from a turbine, you can hear the blade noise. And in some cases, you can faintly hear the rotation of the equipment in the nacelle. But in general, it's they're not very loud at all. I mean, there are standards that they have to comply with, and they seem to do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual at all to see wild game deer and such hanging around the base of a turbine, for example, and it doesn't seem to bother them any.
Give us an idea of the economics of the situation. Who owns the wind farm?
American Electric Power owns Desert Sky Wind Farm.
And you're using General Electric turbines there?
We're using General Electric turbines, and we're also using General Electric to provide an operation and maintenance service.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of what cent a kilowatt hour you put out?
It is competitive with other forms of generation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I'm privileged to tell you we're selling power.
Okay.
It's competitive today. Of course, there are some stimulants that have to be there because of the large capital investments required. And it is almost a given that as we build and develop more, that the price is going to come down some, and maybe the capital investments won't be quite as harsh in the future.
So there's a payback period then to pay back those capital investments?
Yes, sir.
And how long is that?
It's going to vary by project, depending upon the financing and everything else, and of course, the power purchase agreement. You have to have you've got to have somebody to purchase the power before you can develop a project, for the most part.
Walter Hornaday, what is the economics of a power production like? Is it really? Can you pay it back in a few years, or is it cheap enough? Or
generally, it takes a long time to pay back for the power plant, but a 20-year design life is how we engineer and design the projects, and that's investors that invest in the project look at that a patient 20-year return on their investment.
And in fact, the that's not the biggest. This one we're talking about is not the biggest one in the state, is it?
No, there's 5 wind projects in Texas that are over 150 megawatts, which require an investment of over $100 million each. And those rank among the top 10 wind farms in the world.
In fact, does Texas have the biggest wind farm in the world?
It has one of the biggest, the King Mountain 280-megawatt project at one time was. There's a project that's been expanded up in Washington State that's a few turbines larger.
Gentlemen, what is the potential for wind energy? I mean, what is the sky the limit, so to speak, on this? I mean, what is the potential for producing what percentage of your own electricity from wind power?
If I could go ahead, answer that, there was we did a project up in Carson County in the panhandle of Texas, and the county judge said, we like this 80-turbine project you did. I want more. Tell me what my potential is so we can try to do more here. And we figured out on the windy areas in his county, and if we filled up all the windy areas in his 30-mile square county, we could power half the state of Texas. So, and there's 254 counties in the state. So there is really unlimited potential. You will never develop all the wind potential in the state of Texas on all the wind power that's out there. Right now, what we're doing is picking the best performing sites and that bring in very low cost power to utilities like CPS are the ones that are being built now.
Mm-hmm. Joe, did you want to say something?
Well, it is unlimited, but from a technical standpoint, but there are some financial problems and operational issues. Wind is an opportunity fuel. You take the electricity when the wind blows. When it's not blowing, you've got to get your electricity elsewhere. Point of fact, this year when we had our peak, 4,300 megawatt day, at the time of the peak, we were only getting 3 megawatts from the wind farm. Turns out summer afternoons are not the highest wind days in West Texas. So you do have to temper that with some backup power, things like that.
But if you had enough wind distribution around the state, if you had a whole network of turbines and on your own grid, and Texas has its own grid, right?
That's correct.
You could make up one place for the other, could you not?
Theoretically, you could. But it would take one of the limiting factors that we do have in Texas is, especially out in West Texas, is the electric grid. It's not real robust out there yet.
And that's an infrastructure problem.
That's an
infrastructure
problem.
Russell, creating an infrastructure, right?
Absolutely. we've spoken many times with the folks in West Texas to get them to understand that it's no different than the oil and gas industry was for them. It's one thing to have a product But if you can't get it to market, it doesn't do you a bit of good. So you've got to have the pipelines, basically, for the electricity. And historically, the transmission grid in West Texas, as has already been mentioned, has been weak or not robust. And we need a significant build-out of transmission to really reach our potential in West Texas. And that's a very difficult thing to accomplish because of the nature of regulation, how decisions are made about building a transmission line, and how the Public Utility Commission determines when a line is to be built and when the builder of it can recoup their investment. These are all complications that we're working on, looking ahead to dealing with the regulatory agencies and potentially the legislature, as we did in this last session.
Mm-hmm. Now, a federal tax credit played a major role in Texas establishing wind power, did it not, Russell? I mean, tell us, there was a 1.8 cent per kilowatt hour credit?
The production tax credit is, is what you're referring to. And throughout the United States, the production tax credit is a critical element that's driven the development of wind projects, and no less so in Texas. If that's not renewed, and it comes to an end this time at the end of this year, if Congress does not renew it, then that changes the whole picture for the development of wind. We feel fairly confident, I think, that it will be renewed. You should understand that wind does enjoy very strong bipartisan support in Congress and has for some time, and this production tax credit has been extended, I guess this is going on the third time. And we're confident that it will be again. I heard a bit of chuckling in the crowd about the idea that it has bipartisan support. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. If it did not have bipartisan support, we would not have had it for the number of years that we have.
Even though we don't have a big cohesive energy bill that would, you know, look at all these different sources. It's sort of a mishmash now. Wind is still bipartisan popular.
Absolutely, and wind is a significant part of that bill. There are so many places where the issue of energy is being addressed at the federal level to try to have the energy bill be the be-all and end-all of what's happening to energy is simply not a realistic understanding of what happens in Washington, D.C.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Please here, step up to the microphones if you have a question to ask, and give us a call, and we have somebody at the microphone already. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. What is the possibility of offshore wind turbines? This sounds like they'd be closer to Houston, New Orleans, other cities.
Good question.
Good question. And as a matter of fact, their City Public Service has a request for proposal for an additional 100 megawatts of wind power. And one of the projects that has proposed is offshore. There are issues with offshore. If you go up to Massachusetts and in the area around Martha's Vineyard and all that, some very strong-minded people who are very strong wind supporters are actually opposing the development of wind farms offshore. So there, it is a loaded sort of question, and it's not going to be easy to ask. There are environmental issues associated with coastlines that we don't have out in West Texas. And that will be something that we're going to have to address.
If you go to Europe, you go into Copenhagen, you're greeted by hundreds of them.
That's correct.
Lining the ports there.
There is in the United States, there's a strong not in my backyard feeling. One of the problems with the transmission grid, it'll be pretty easy to get transmission lines built in West Texas. But when you start getting to within 20 or 30 miles of a major urban area, that's where the problem is going to be. Mm-hmm. And those are the issues that we're just going to have to address. Uh-huh. We've had transmission line projects that have been going on for 10 years. They're very difficult to get licensed.
All right, we're going to come back and talk lots more about wind energy and politics and other kinds of issues of wind policy that you'd like to talk about. Stay with us. We'll be right back from San Antonio after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're in San Antonio, Texas, talking about wind power with my guests, Walter Hornaday, president of Cielo Wind Power in Austin, Joe Fulton, director of research and environmental management for City Public Service in San Antonio, Russell E. Smith, executive director of the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association, and Roy Blackshear is the plant manager of the Desert Sky Wind Farm Project. Roy, how big are the blades on those wind turbines out there?
The blades are 112 foot long, and they'll weigh somewhere around 13,500 pounds each. So the blade and hub assembly together make up about 72,000 pounds, give or take a little.
And how tall do they stand, and how fast do they spin?
Well, when we look at hub height, which is how we talk about the height, that's at 65 meters, which is right around 211 foot. The blades, the maximum speed the blades will ever see is about 21 RPM, just slightly over that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we use a technology that as the wind speed increases, once it's at the high end of the speed range, say at 21 RPM, the blades will pitch back. So your power is linear from that point up.
So they don't spin any faster once they get that speed?
No, 21 RPM is the top speed.
And these are, gentlemen, these are not the biggest turbines around. And I understand, Walter, that there are even bigger turbines around the world in different parts of the world.
The state-of-the-art equipment is generally in Europe, and European companies generally lead technology for new equipment. GE is the only real American maker wind turbines, and there's one large Japanese maker, Mitsubishi, but that state-of-the-art equipment gets prototyped and tested in Europe, and then once it's proven out, it shows up here in U.S. projects. And right now, the projects out there at the Desert Sky Project are 1.5 megawatts, and now there's even prototypes of 3.0 megawatt turbines, 100 meter towers, which are 330 feet tall, and the equipment is getting more efficient and larger. And one thing that always stays the same, though, is the tip speed of the equipment. It's always the bigger the equipment, the slower the rotor turns, because that's the way the engineering for the wind turbines work.
1-800-989-8255. We're going to go to the phones now. Let's go out to San Francisco. Go to Alan in San Francisco. Hi, Alan.
Yes, we have turbines in our area, Altamont, and they're wonderful, except they kill a lot of birds. I'm wondering if they've done something there in Texas to keep the hawks and eagles from being killed by the turbines.
Mr. Blackshear? Are they killing?
Well, that's probably more of a sighting issue than anything else. You have to do avian studies before you build a project, and, of course, that was done here. There just simply isn't. There's not a lot of water around here, and the trees that you're accustomed to seeing are probably more than 5 foot, and that's about as high as they get out here.
Well, our birds are soaring birds like eagles and hawks that are riding thistles, and they also use the updrafts. So they're pretty much following the wind along, and then they run right into the turbines.
Well, I have no doubt that that happens in places. At this particular location, we don't have a lot of those large birds, but even the large birds we do have, we haven't found a kill around a turbine since we started the site. That's been about 19 months, and we're on the site all the time, so we're looking for that kind of thing. And I guess we're just fortunate that this area just isn't compelled to have that kind of thing happen.
That's good to hear.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for calling. Walter, did you want to jump in there?
Well, the Altamont Pass project is one that was developed in the early 80s, and those are more primitive designs with lattice towers that give these soaring birds a place to perch where they never had a place to perch before. As well as the farmers got so much royalty money from the wind turbines, they took all the cattle off, and the cattle got knee-high, and the rats and rabbits moved into the grass. And since then, we've learned on Texas projects, we design the towers where there's no perching place for raptors. We bury the power lines underground. We put UV reflective paint that birds can see. They look like neon to birds at night. As well as we ask the ranchers to preserve the way they've managed the land and kept it the same, so really don't come in and change the habitat and the way these projects are done. As a result, these have very minimal impact on birds and other wildlife.
Mm-hmm. Gentleman at the microphone over here, sir. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask about a type of wind energy that is just as massive as the installations we see out in West Texas, but avoids the problem of noise and the problem of killing birds and the immense problem of transporting or wiring that energy with all the wiring losses back to San Antonio. A prototype was built in Manzanares, Spain, and another is planned for Sri Lanka, and several are planned for Australia near the Murray River I believe it's northern Victoria. This is a method of using a giant solar collector and a very large chimney that causes air to rise and go up that chimney, and you have your turbines inside the power tower.
So they're horizontally placed instead of
Yes. Well, turbine, you can have it either way,
right.
This way
right.
or this way.
I see.
But the big thing is the collector, as far as 5 miles across, and then the actual chimney. This is also called a solar chimney, and it takes it relies on the difference of temperature from what you've created in your collector and what the temperature is way up high. This is a proven concept. It's being built right now in Australia. It's all over not all over the internet, but do a Google search on power tower and solar chimneys, and you'll see thousands and thousands of references. Now, to make my point.
I thought that was it.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, to make my point, and I'll conclude. We don't need to go to West Texas to use the wind that's created by the sun. We can do it in South Bear County, where we don't have any natural wind, but we have plenty of potential for manufactured wind with one of these power tower concepts.
Interesting.
I'd like to know what CPS thinks about
that.
You
make your own wind. Joe, any questions? Have you heard of this before?
Oh yes, solar power towers.
Man who surfs the internet, you can tell.
There you go. What the gentleman is referring to, and I'm not aware that other than that one little project in Spain that any have ever been built, they talk about building them in Australia. Understand the scope of this thing. That tall chimney is 3,000 feet tall. It would be the tallest structure built by man. The greenhouse at the bottom is 10,000 acres. These are huge facilities, and that 3,000-foot tower and the 10,000 acres would produce about 200, 250 megawatts. Be very expensive, and you could actually, and it would have about the same capacity factor as a regular wind farm, and I think the regular wind farm in West Texas would be far more cost-effective. So when you factor in the cost-effectiveness and the enormous size, I'm talking a project that would just... You could see it from anywhere in Bear County, and if you talk about NIMBY,
Texas-sized project. Right?
It's a Texas-sized project, but San Antonio is a city of over a million people.
Sure, Joe. Why not have several smaller ones then?
Well,
good to
Russell wants to jump in. Okay.
Well, in fact, there are rumors that are more than rumors of a possible project like that to be built in Texas near Monahans.
Where is that?
That's a long way from here, several hundred miles in the upper part of the state. It's more of a desert type of area, and in fact, where you have the most sun is the logical place to build it, because if you're in an area that has significant amount of cloud cover and so forth, you're obviously going to reduce the effectiveness of the equipment. So you wouldn't want to build one in a place where you have significant problems with intermittency with the sun. We've known for a long time that if you're going to do solar projects, period, for electrical generation on a large scale, you're looking at 100 miles further west before you begin to get into the areas where the solar availability is significant. The other issues that Joe mentioned are critical to this. I'm not saying that one won't ever be built.
Right.
Anything's possible, and if it could be done somewhere, maybe Texas is the place to do it. But to build one of them would be a massive, massive undertaking. And it's just not realistic to think that that's going to be the way we go instead of the way we're approaching wind today anytime in the near term.
Thank you very much for your question. Of course, one of the problems that we talked about is that the infrastructure doesn't exist for distributing the electricity all over the state. You can't store, Walter, the power right now in any feasible way, can you?
Well, you don't store nuclear, coal, or gas power right. either. What wind power, like Joel Fulton talked about before, is it's good as a fuel saver or helps with the variable cost or variable operations of the fixed infrastructure of conventional power you have in the state, and unless you have other solar power that'll more follow when you need the electricity the most. But all the time, utilities have to vary their use up and down as people use power up and down, and wind power works within that area. The utility ramps up and down its operations.
Russell, we'll get to that. You're taking away my thunder on this one. I'm going to talk about that's Russell.
I should point out that there are ways to store wind yes. energy that are being explored here in the state right now, ranging from compressed air, where you utilize the energy from the wind to push air down into a cavern in the earth and bring the pressure up just like a tank. And then you've got that pressure to draw on when you want electricity at a certain time. And so you take that power and you do store it. How that meshes with the overall grid and what benefit it brings to the system is what's under investigation now, who would own such a system and so forth. So that is one possibility. Another obvious possibility is to utilize the electricity to produce hydrogen from water mm-hmm. and store it as hydrogen. In order for that to be advantageous, you have to have an end use for the hydrogen. And that's all a complex set of issues and discussions that are ongoing as we speak, and we may ultimately end up with something along those lines.
For hydrogen for use in fuel cells or
hydrogen
combustion engines
used
or
directly or yeah. in combustion engines or in right. fuel cells or whatever it may be, but it's no different than any other fuel. You have to move it from where it's created or where it is in existence to where it's needed. So you still have to have a transportation element of this, of some form or fashion.
Is anybody talking about creating that kind of infrastructure around the state?
Sure.
Joe, do you know anything about anything?
It's been talked about for over yeah. 20 years. The hydrogen economy, I mean, there was a book that was published more than 20 years ago called The Hydrogen Economy. It's one of those things that on its face, it sounds pretty simple to do, but it takes an awful lot of, number one, willpower and financial power to get the ball rolling on that. And I don't think we're there yet. Now, we need to be talking in terms of, for energy in the United States, we need to be talking in terms of 50-year planning cycles and things like that. We need to start pretty soon, but the full fruition of these things, we need to be looking at 40, 50 years.
But you got to start talking about
it. We're starting to talk about that, yes.
Talk is cheap, as we say. Okay. Russell?
And we might differ a little bit in the time frame by which we might be able to bring hydrogen forward, but, it's a long-term process, and it has to be planned.
Mm-hmm. Talking about wind energy, hydrogen energy, the two go hand in hand this hour. Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Here in San Antonio, let's go to the audience. Yes, ma'am.
There's a little bit of irony in my question because Houston Oil Money sent me to college. My father worked on an oil drilling operation up at Cape Yakutaga, Alaska, when I was in sixth grade. And that was many, many years ago. We lived in Tracy, California from 1986 to 1994 before we moved to Texas. And the caller who phoned in talked about the Altamont Pass. We used to take that route daily on our commutes into the Bay Area, and we were there when the cows were still grazing under the turbines. But my concern is a little bit more contemporary. Walter Cronkite has made quite an issue of not putting these turbines in the Nantucket Sound area because he doesn't want to look at them. He was interviewed on Newsnight with Aaron Brown, and Aaron Brown's a friend of mine. And I emailed Aaron and I said, really, you ought to approach Mr. Cronkite and tell him he ought to think of it as a Christo art project. There's no reason, you know, I have looked at these turbines for 8 years. I've seen the mushroom on the Altamont. I'm familiar with the turbine farms down near Palm Springs, California. But I don't think it's fair that, you know, the country does not share its own respective part of the energy problems that we're now facing. My question is, do you think, I've been through West Texas, we moved from California through West Texas, it's pretty wide open country. Do you think Walter Cronkite's argument is valid? And the San Antonio Express News just picked up his column in the last month, and he also wrote a piece, you're probably all familiar with it, in the last 3 weeks, but do you think his argument is valid? And do you think that West Texas will ever have a NIMBY problem?
Let me go to the phone. So who's, Roy's been sitting there quietly listening. Roy Blackshear, any comment on that?
In West Texas, I think these things have been welcomed with open arms. I can understand all the stuff that's going on in the East and everything else, but certainly West Texas has its own kind of beauty, and I don't see that disrupted by these things. I'm afraid it's just not an issue in this part of the country. Now, that may be just my own personal opinion, but I don't think it is.
Walter, do you want to?
The nice thing about offshore projects is there isn't a limit to how far you can push them offshore. Europe right now is looking at most offshore development is around 10 miles offshore, where the curvature of the earth and the spray or the mist around oceanside areas keeps you from even seeing these turbines or even knowing they're there. And that's one thing that if you saw offshore development in the U.S., it would likely be in shallow shelf areas like the Gulf Coast or even around Massachusetts where you couldn't see it. What's the Massachusetts project isn't one that's pushed, planned right now to be pushed offshore to where you can't see it. It's at, right there in the sound between Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. So that's why they're having the siting problems.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the map of the U.S., speaking of offshore, the Great Lakes is a perfect place for you look at the wind speeds, something to go offshore and probably never see them out there. And speaking of wind energy, you look at the maps again and you see place like North and South Dakota, prime areas, North Dakota, South Dakota. They talk about those places as being, could be potentially be the Saudi Arabia of the U.S. because you could get 40% of your electricity from it. That's not right, Russell?
Well, that may be right, but they're not the Saudi Arabia.
I don't mean oil-wise. I mean energy-wise.
Texas is the Saudi
Excuse
Arabia.
Excuse me. I forgot where I was for a second.
We claimed that 15 years ago.
In wind energy. Well, we'll see. You know, are you going to overtake California soon? Is it going to overtake California in wind energy here? What do you think, Walter?
We definitely have the growth and demand for electricity. There's a plan to have about 2,000 megawatts online by 2008, and Texans are actually ahead of that plan as far as the legislation that was passed in 1999. So, yes, I think that Texas will be ahead of California in the next 10 years.
Wow, okay. We're going to take a short break and come back and take lots more of your questions and talk with our guests about wind power here in San Antonio. If you have, please get on the phone and give us a call on number 1-800-989-8255. Right here in our audience, please step up to the microphones. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatto, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking this hour about wind power in Texas with my guest, Walter Hornaday, president of Cielo Wind Power in Austin, Joe Fulton, director of research and environmental management for City Public Service in San Antonio, Russell Smith, executive director of the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association in Austin, and Roy Blackshear is the plant manager of the Desert Sky Wind Farm Project. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to this microphone right here. Yes, go ahead.
I was originally going to ask a question about the ability to store wind power, and you've gone into that a little bit. And I was wondering if, at this point, it doesn't sound to me like you can effectively store wind power. At some point in the future, hopefully that will be the case. And do you think or do you foresee a time when wind power will be the most prevalent form of energy? And if so, when do you think that will be?
Wow. Who's got the crystal ball here? Huh? Well, the other Europeans are way ahead of us, are they not? They're
In wind generation technology, yes. In energy storage, I don't know that anybody is way out in front of anybody. Russell talked about excavating caverns. In fact, the largest cavern storage project in the world is in Alabama. And in Texas here, we're talking about solution mining, salt domes, and things like that, and you can store compressed air. We're still in the very nascent stages of looking into that, and it's very expensive, and there are environmental problems associated with that. But those issues will be addressed and will be resolved. not next year, not the year after, but I'm, again, talking in this 10 to 40 or 50-year time frame.
No offense meant here, but every 25 years, going back to the last energy crisis in 1974, we always hear, oh, in the next 25 years we'll have something. And it's 25 years later now, and we haven't got anything.
Well, we have wind power.
We have wind power. Okay, but it didn't take 20... The fuel cell was patented in 1839, but we don't have that yet. So
well, we've got four of them right here at Brooks Air Force Base. And
people talk a lot about, oh, in the next 25, 50 years, but no one does anything. You know, we sit there and talk, someone else is going to do it. Someone else is going to do it.
In 2003, the most efficient way to incorporate wind power into the grid is what's done in Texas is you have a fleet of natural gas power plants around the state. And when the wind is blowing, you turn back the throttle and you use less gas, you use less water, create less pollution. And when the wind's not blowing, you turn it up so you've got air conditioning on an August afternoon when you need it. And the plan in Texas is to how much of that can you do and still have a reliable grid. And the example is in Europe, about 20% of your electricity capacity can come from wind power and operate it just like I described. And in Texas right now, about 1% to 2% is done that way. So we still have lots of potential before we start getting into do we need solar power to during the day or do we need storage?
I think in Europe, the incentive has been political. And people decided that's what they're going to do.
Economic. In Denmark, also.
Economics is a huge part.
They don't have any natural resources. In Denmark, you don't have coal, you don't have gas. They didn't want to do nuclear, so they invested in wind power because they had no natural resources. Texas, as fortunate, has lots of gas, coal, so it doesn't have the problems. Hasn't been pushed like a lot of European countries.
But European things have done the blasphemous thing of taxing the gallon of gasoline and taking, you know, they're $3, $4 a gallon of gasoline, which no one will hear of here, but they take that money and they sink it back into creating alternative energy sources.
Well, wind power competes without taxing natural gas, without taxing nuclear, without taxing coal. And even when you don't take in environmental considerations, it is starting to compete, and that's why utilities are looking at it.
Well, why is it, and I asked this question at the beginning, why is it that the governor, who was governor here at this time, and now that he's president, you don't hear hardly a word about, you mentioned this is bipartisan support in across the country, but Russell, you don't hear any, you know, the president saying, we've got to go up and create these wind generators anymore.
Well, I think realistically you have to observe what actually occurs rather than projecting what you feel like is going on. The energy bill has significant positives in it for renewable energy, including significant positives for wind. And if that bill passes ultimately with those things intact, then what the wind industry has been pursuing will be a fact. And
tell us an extension for
at least 3 years.
What is in the bill that would be positive for wind?
That's the major thing.
The tax and
that extension. Wind is close to competitive at this point. The production tax credit gives it that extra edge that it needs. Now, beyond that, it's issues of how to get the power where it needs to go, and that has to do with transmission. It's a very complicated set of issues around transmission. Not just in Texas, where we have our own separate grid, but as we are all aware, in other parts of the country.
Right.
There is a chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, who was the chairman of the Public Utility Commission of Texas during the period of time in which we developed this approach to wind in Texas and to transmission, which was favorable to the wind industry.
Mm-hmm.
He is currently working on and trying to figure out how to umbrella the types of things we've done in Texas on a national basis. And if you follow what's happened in his efforts, you'll find that he's run against a lot of different walls that he had not anticipated. When you look at the fact that you're dealing with so many different jurisdictions, states and states' rights, how these various smaller grids interact and interconnect with each other, reliability issues and so forth. So it's a very complex set of issues to deal with. But there is effort underway to try to deal with those issues.
Mm-hmm. So that is the key waiting to see what's going to happen to that credit.
Right. And the conference committee is chewing on it as we speak. And it's our hope that there will be a bill before Thanksgiving.
Okay. Well, that's something to watch out for. Yes, sir.
I was going to ask, what will it take to increase the amount of wind power produced in the U.S.? And the tax credit sort of addresses the supply side because it provides some financial incentive for building wind projects. But on the demand side, what can the average citizen, the average consumer do to help the growth of wind power in the U.S.?
Well, let me take a shot at that one. City Public Service buys all of this electricity from the Desert Sky wind farm. We don't own the wind farm for the simple reason that as a governmental entity, we don't get a production tax credit. So it's best for a private entity to develop those things. And if they want to share some of that with us as a potential buyer, so be it. But we wouldn't be out there building wind farms on our own for that very reason. We do have, it is a premium product. It costs more than the alternatives that we have available to us. And we have in San Antonio a program called Wintricity. And this is not unlike NPR every year going forth to its customers and saying, hey, we want you to contribute to help to keep the message coming. And in San Antonio, and this is not just unique to San Antonio, nationwide, people say, yes, I'd be willing to spend $3 to $5 a month for some renewable energy, 20, 30% in polls. And yet when it comes to the bottom line, hey, fork over $3 to $5 a month, 1% show up. And that's not unlike, like I said, NPR or public television. There's a lot of people out there. Hey, CPS is buying that stuff anyway. It's coming down the pike. Why should I contribute? So we have opportunities nationwide. There are a lot of green power programs, and you can vote with your dollars that says, hey, I support this concept. And what we're doing now, since we haven't really been that successful with the general public, in February we're configuring our campaign, and we're going after commercial clients. Those are the people that really support this stuff. As a matter of fact, the United States Air Force is the largest consumer of wind power here in Bexar County. So we're very pleased to have the Air Force here and supporting wind power with their dollars.
I saw three fuel cells right here.
Four fuel cells.
They hid one from me, I think. Yes. I only saw three of them. Russell, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I should point out that in Texas we have, again, a rather complicated, I guess, set of issues when it comes to how you purchase your power since we went through electric utility deregulation in 1999. The municipal utilities, such as City Public Service, are not in the deregulated marketplace. But the areas outside of some 80 municipal utilities in the state that are in competitive areas can choose their provider. And there are providers out there offering different levels of renewable energy, including such companies as Green Mountain, which provides a 100% wind product and other combinations. So individuals who live outside of the City Public Service area or anywhere in the country where there is deregulation can choose the company that provides them that power if they are willing to pay a little bit more, and sometimes it's not much, sometimes it's a little more, depends on the area. So you do have that option. And there are some very successful programs. Wintricity was just mentioned. Austin Energy has its Green Choice program, which is the most successful program in the United States for doing this type of purchasing of clean power.
We're talking about wind energy this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's go to this gentleman right here.
Yes, I believe I heard in NPR about a Japanese design turbine that works with vertical blades instead of the familiar three blade that we see is more familiar to us. The thing about this machine, so design, is that there is a cylindrical shape. It can be much smaller than the big towers that you have, and apparently it can be used for home production of electricity. Is there such, has anybody heard about this, and is anything for the individual farmer or individual homeowner that can produce their own energy?
So this is like the blade is lying down flat instead of standing up?
It's like
up.
An egg beater.
Okay, Walter, you opened your mouth first. Tell us about this.
Well, wind power, every time the wind speed increases just a small amount, it's a cube factor on the power you get out of it. And as you go higher, the wind is also strong as you go higher. So these egg beater machines capture the wind low to the ground. Unfortunately, the wind is much stronger aloft. So that's why the designs with these very tall towers with to catch the blade, wind power aloft beat out these egg beater type designs.
And he was saying that there's no reason that, you can't install your own smaller wind turbine in your home, right? There are a lot of them.
The most efficient use of those is where you're off the grid, and that's where you can use a solar panel to charge some batteries, or you can use a wind turbine to charge some batteries. It's very, both solar panels and small, maybe 400-watt wind turbines are very common and very efficient and less costly than trying to bring the utility's power line out to you.
Mm-hmm. Or pump water, something like that, like right. They did. 1-800-99-8255. This gentleman is going to the microphone. Let's see what he has to say.
Kind of took my question away from me a little bit. It seemed to me like years ago, Grandpa used to have a little generator on the farm, and this may not be the right panel to ask, but what are we doing to make those so they're more appropriate for modern usage?
When you started the show, you talked about how great Texas is. We still don't have as many wind turbines in the state of Texas as we did back in 1920 or 1930 when all the farmers and ranchers had wind chargers, and at night they'd have the lights and they'd listen to the radio by. And one day we'll get as many wind turbines in Texas as we had almost 100 years ago. But right now those small chargers are really only effective for if you're off the grid and you're trying to avoid the cost of hooking up to the utility.
Gee, you're talking about days when L.A. had mass transit. You know, when Florida had solar panels on everyone's roofs back then also. I mean, Joe, any way we can return to those days? Or?
Well, as a matter of fact, there are ways we can do that. One of the things that CPS is doing, we have a net metering program. And what that means is that if you're willing, and we have a low interest rate loan program that we support, if you want to put a solar cell or a solar collector on your roof, we will let you inject that electricity into the grid. It runs your meter backwards, and you basically get credited at the full retail price of electricity. And that's one big way.
All right. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank my guest, Walter Hornaday. He's president of Cielo Wind Power in Austin. Joe Fulton, director of research and environmental management for City Public Service in San Antonio. Russell Smith, executive director of the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association in Austin. And Roy Blackshear, plant manager for the Desert Sky Wind Farm Project. Thank you all for joining us this hour. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and our web producer, and our intern is Annalise Strachan. We have special thanks today. Special thanks to Janet Allen and Joe Gwathby and the rest of the staff at Texas Public Radio, and also thanks to the Satai Network, the University of Texas San Antonio College of Engineering, DPT Laboratories, and the U.S. Air Force, and the nice folks here at the Brook City Base for hosting us today. If you'd like to write us, please send your letters to Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, New York, New York, 10020. You can also surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we make curricula out of all the stuff we do on Science Friday. Science Friday's Kids Connection is there, and there's free tools for teaching courses in high school and middle school about Science Friday. And also there's back issues of Science Friday. You can listen to them on real audio, or if you want to listen to them later, you can download them on your Audible player. You can also sign up for that. I'm Ira Flato in San Antonio.